From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning, focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us as we move on through the first part of the year of our Lord 2021. Yeah, it's hard to believe. This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And we are glad to welcome in Jacqueline Aguilar, who is the coordinator of Respect Life Ministries here for the Diocese of Sacramento. And we're lucky to have her. Jacqueline, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Bob. Happy to be here.
Good to have you with us. Sorry it's not in person, but that day is coming.
Yes, indeed. We are all praying for that day.
We are all praying. It's like, I can't wait to get a shot. That's a terrible thing to say, but I can't wait for my turn. But one day we'll all be vaccinated, and hopefully this, God's in charge. He knows what's going on, so he's going to take care of us.
That's right. We just have to trust in our Lord. His timing is the perfect timing.
Where did you learn that? That's so perfect. That is exactly right. His timing is the perfect timing. I say that people say, well, they worry about how old they are. You know, and you go, well, wait a minute. You were born on the exact day at the exact minute that God wanted you to be born. Don't second guess that. Don't second guess it. You're the exact age you're supposed to be right now, you know.
That's right. And That's right.
Yeah, God's timing is impeccable. Well, we are in the midst toward the tail end of, our pro-life novena and a number of still great pro-life events still coming up as we move up on the anniversary of Roe v. Wade, which is January 22nd, a Friday, and Mass at the Cathedral, which will be live streamed, 12 p.m. Mass on Friday, and Bishop Soto has declared this. He will be the celebrant, of course, and he has declared this a day of reparation for all the abortions that have taken place, and so many of us are participating in the pro-life novena, which started on the 14th and will run through the 22nd. But you can jump in and join the novena anytime.
That's right. The novena is being live streamed through Facebook and Instagram at SCD Forum Faith. So you can definitely, we're posting it at 10:30 each day. But you're welcome to check out the page and pray with your family any time of the day. Yeah, so it started January 14th, and it'll conclude on January 22nd on the anniversary of Roe v. Wade. Like you mentioned, Bishop will be celebrating the pro-life mass on the cathedral. And before the mass begins at 12, we are also going to be at the Sacramento Life Center, and we'll be sharing a live ultrasound as well.
Yes.
And a testimony from the one woman and, her experience with a very pro-life message, of course, and how we can prepare ourselves, to welcome new life, to always embrace new life, regardless of circumstances, of just embracing God's beauty and witnessing that life in her womb is just transforms us.
Yeah, the ultrasound is such a game changer. You hear that all the time from people that I know with my kids, even though I've never been inclined or even had a thought about an abortion, if I were in that position, seeing that ultrasound would just, I think I'd do a 180 right now. I don't know how you can, especially when the doctor or the technician says, and that's the heart beating right there. I don't know how you could walk away from that.
Exactly. Witnessing, the heartbeat begins in 21 days.
Unbelievable.
So it's just amazing. And you'll get to see, on that day, on the 22nd, her ultrasound. And so again, I invite you all to, you know, to join us in prayer, in fasting, accompanying us during this this time. And and before that, you know, like I mentioned, the novena started on the 14th, but we had actually three talks, pro-life talks, January 11th, 12th, and 13th. Mm-hmm. So those talks were recorded. So again, they're on our Facebook page and Instagram page. Actually, they're for sure on our Facebook page. And it's the topic about human dignity. So it's Spanish and in English. As well, we had a guest speaker from Life Action.
Mm-hmm.
So all these talks are wonderful. It's great to watch as a family and to begin this conversation of educating our children, educating yourselves, and taking action in protecting every life.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's just you mentioned the heart starts beating at 21 days. When I first heard that, and I don't know, it was a few years ago. It was, you know, we're learning more about the preborn all the time. I mean, scientifically. But when I first heard the heart start beating at 21 days, I was shocked. I was surprised. I didn't realize it was that early, you know, that you would actually have a functioning heart at 21 days when the baby obviously is still very small. You know, and that's it's such a miracle that it's just so tragic that anybody would want to interrupt God's handiwork. And it makes me, and I know the church really stresses this, and everybody in the pro-life ministry believes in this, is we need to deal with people that are facing this as a challenge or they see it as a tragedy with great compassion and really try to help them through it. For so many of us, the news that you're pregnant, you're gonna be a dad, you're gonna be a mom, is celebratory. You know, it's the greatest joy we've ever experienced. And it's so tragic to think of other people who see it as a burden, or even worse, as a tragedy. It's really sad, and we really have to treat those people with great compassion.
Right, and yeah, definitely shifting the mentality from like sort of something negative to something positive.
Right.
Definitely being welcoming to motherhood, welcoming to parenthood. Being, you know, like you said, celebrating, hosting, you know, those awesome baby showers, congratulating her, and letting her know that she's not by herself, she's not alone, you know, the mother and the father, right, that they both have the support. So it's definitely, yeah, shifting from a culture of life. So, as a church, the community, as a family, you know, it's just... As I mentioned before, there's actually a beautiful talk about. So there's a talk just recently, and this is also in collaboration with the Office of Youth and Young Adults. So they have a support night, right? Parent support mm-hmm. night. So there was a parent that had guest speakers talking about how important it is to talk to your young children about pro-life issues. So again, it's just embracing life as a family, and then the children will pick it up from the parents. So again, shifting that mentality to a culture of life is so important.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing, and I've been to a number of pro-life events, from very small events to very large events, frequently with my children, and it didn't matter what age they were. You know, when they'd see those, you know, those models, the small, you know, the different stages of pregnancy, the baby model, they're fascinated with it, and it really does start very young, and it's not indoctrination. It's just exposing them to the truth and the beauty of life and the miracle of life.
That's right. And what I like about the fetal development models is it's just stages, and it's something that the child can hold, right? It's like, oh, wow, this is a total mm-hmm. baby, you know? It's like, this, they can visualize it, they can see it, they can touch it, and it's just beautiful.
I remember with my wife's first pregnancy, somebody, and I don't remember who, somebody gave her a book, a great big thick book, and it was about, and it was a day by day of pregnancy. I mean, every single day of the pregnancy. And it was just fascinating. It would, you know, it was maybe one page per day, you know, or maybe two pages. And it would say, today, like the 21st day, today your baby's heart started beating. And today your baby this, or your lungs, or your, and it was just fascinating to go along day by day as this baby developed. And it wasn't a pro-life book, or it was a scientific book, but right. it was, and one of the, I know National Geographic has come out the same thing with a sort of the whole 9 months of pregnancy, with the similar video. Again, it's not a pro-life message. It's not religious. It's not anything. It's just science, and it's so compelling.
Yeah, it just illustrates right there. Life begins, right? Protect that life since the moment of conception, and just, you know, again, how the baby develops throughout the month is just fascinating. It sure is.
Yeah, it's not the whole from conception to birth is not it's not somebody's political judgment. It's not somebody's opinion. It's just fact. And yeah, everything that's happening there is fact. That's right. You know, and it's God's, God has so many miracles, I'd never say which one's bigger than another, but it's one of God's big miracles.
Right, exactly. You know, I have a three-year-old, and I tell her, you know, God designed you. God made you so perfectly. You know, He made your beautiful eyes, your nose, your mouth, you know, all your being. God just did a beautiful work.
That's right.
He just did a masterpiece of how knits us together in our mom's womb. It's just fascinating.
The good book says, you know, he knows every hair on your head. He's numbered every hair on your head. With me, it's kind of easy for him. He only has to count to 10. But, you know, it's remarkable. And the Bible has such a good way of putting those kinds of things where you go, really? God knows every hair on my head? Really? Wow. You know, like, wow. And, you know, even if you don't have any religious beliefs, then nature is miraculous. You know, it's like it's pretty incredible how it all works. You know,
exactly.
Yeah, it's so, Jacqueline, as the coordinator for Respect Life Ministry in the diocese, what are your biggest challenges?
Oh, let's see, my biggest challenges. So shifting, definitely, so again, I think the biggest challenge right now is, and now still going on with the pandemic, right, mm-hmm. of how to continue, like, you know, we're definitely shifting our events virtually, so that way we can still continue our message as a church, right, how important this issue is,
right,
respecting our lives. So just shifting the platform, still having the great support from our community, and our leaders in our diocese, and continuing the message on, and at a parish level as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's super important. It can be a challenging at times, but it's very encouraging to see, so parishes pursuing on in promoting life at their local parish. So that's awesome to see.
Yeah, I know from talking to Marie Leatherby, the executive director at the Sacramento Life Center, she says, you know, the number of people coming in has increased. We haven't seen a slowdown in pregnancy because of the pandemic, but we have seen perhaps an uptick in the number of people that might be considering abortion. They've lost their jobs. They're worried. They're not optimistic, if you will, and they need our support. They need our help. They need our compassion.
Yes, for sure. I've heard the same thing from her and other pregnancy centers. Just that. How important is keeping their, their doors open and welcoming in with their services, helping the women in need during this time. And that's a great point, because during this series of Respect Life events, like we mentioned, the novena, right, lay to also support is by prayer and also giving donations, right, donations mm-hmm. to support these centers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's something that we're encouraging everyone to make a donation to the centers. You can register, and we also have Protect Every Life masks that we're giving those who register and give a donation.
Right.
Because all the proceeds will go to Sacramento Life Center, as well the Gabriel Project.
Right.
And the two maternity homes here in our diocese, which are Bishop Gallegos and St. Teresa.
Yeah, Mother Teresa up in, yes,
Mother
Saint
Teresa.
Mother Teresa, yeah. Mm-hmm. I leave the saint off sometimes, up in Placerville. And they do such a good job up there. In the last month or so, I've interviewed people from up there. And a relatively small town. But the need is there as well, and of course the Bishop Gallegos Maternity Home here in Sacramento, which has done such heroic work for so many years, and it's nice to see and the Gabriel Project, so many volunteers doing such wonderful work to help women in need, and it all goes along with walking with women in need and our diocesan initiative to really. As the Holy Father says, as Bishop Soto says, to accompany women, to be with them on their journey.
That's right. Welcome them, to accompany them, to be that light for them and that comfort.
Yeah.
To know that they're not alone in the journey, that there's a community behind them and is walking with them. So that's super important. And talking about walking with moms and needs, since the pandemic, where Bishop Soto advised not to go to San Francisco this year, but we're offering instead the Solidarity Walk locally.
Right, on Saturday.
On Saturday the 23rd, yeah. So again, walking Solidarity on that day. And this is the time to, again, unite as a family, right? As a family to pray together. And we're hoping if that day to join together in prayer and in your local neighborhood, especially with everything going on in staying close to home, right? And walking, with your rosary, praying a rosary that day, and you're welcome to take a picture and post it on social media as well, just mm-hmm. as a sign of solidarity. Yeah.
That's a great, mm-hmm. great idea. And, of course, I'm presuming, and I know it had to be modified a little bit, I'm presuming starting Ash Wednesday, we will have another 40 Days for Life campaign.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, the 40 Days for Life will continue for sure. Yes.
Very good. Well, Jacqueline, thanks for all you do. It's vital work, and we're just so fortunate to have you heading up the team. And we all have to remember that most powerful thing that God has given us in His prayer.
Amen.
Amen. Well,
that's right. Yeah, so our information can be found on SCD.org, and that's /protect every life.
Very good. We'll look forward to talking to you again soon, Jacqueline. Thanks so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you, Bob. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, God bless. That's Jacqueline Aguilar, who is the coordinator of Respect Life Ministry here in the Diocese of Sacramento. And again, you can join that novena. Yeah, it's almost over. It ends on Friday, but join the novena. And I've been participating in it myself, and it's very meaningful. I think sometimes we're going to solve everything on our own, and then if that doesn't work, how about we pray about it? Well, let's reverse the order there and put the prayer first. So we'll take a quick break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Hello, this is Jennifer Campbell, Director of Trinity Pines Catholic Center. You're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Jennifer, for the wonderful introduction. And hopefully you'll be having a real Camp Pendola this summer. And if not, I'm sure we'll have a virtual Camp Pendola. Well, Julie Sly, the editor of the Catholic Herald magazine, joins us now. Julie, good day to you.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
Doing fine.
Good.
Looking at this wonderful Catholic Herald with six really good-looking people on the cover.
Yes, sir. They're all related to our cover story on St. Patrick, St. Vincent High School in Vallejo. And they're celebrating, well, Pilato County is celebrating 150 years of Catholic education.
In Solano County. Isn't that remarkable?
It's pretty remarkable.
Didn't become a state till 1850, so that's about 170 years ago. So that's remarkable.
Right.
That would be right after the Civil War.
We do have a page in the story talking about the origins, and let's see. The first school was opened in 1870.
Yep.
Yeah.
So,
and the first graduates received their diplomas in 1880. Then there was another school opened later on. So people, that's on page 13, people can kind of read about the history of that. And I think we did cover this the last time that we talked to a couple of a family that's been very involved with the school for at least two, if not three generations, and also talked with the principal and the director of advancement communications just about how that community has survived over the years. And it's a very, very close-knit community, and the high school courses are most ethnically diverse. And students come from, as we mentioned, students come from 27 different zip codes.
Yeah, and several dioceses as well.
Right.
Yeah, and right. You know, and there's some wonderful old photos. They're mostly class photos, but are there? I mean, 1870. You know, they did have cameras and things. Are there very many pictures in their archives that people could look at? Of, you know, the physical plant and things like that back to 1870.
You know, I'm not sure those were provided.
I think we may have. We may have lost Julie. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
There you go. Okay.
Yes.
You said those photos were provided.
Those photos were provided to me, I guess, from their archives. But they could go on St. Patrick's, St. Vincent High School website, spsv.org.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they have some history there. So I'm not really sure how far back they would have photos.
Mm-hmm. Be very interesting to see. I may have to take a field trip down there.
Yeah, perhaps. Well, and maybe some of them, since the Dominican Sisters of San Marcel were involved,
mm-hmm.
And also what was the Christian Brothers from Ireland that
wow.
were involved.
So Dominican Sisters, did they swim across the bay to get there every day, or?
No, they were. You're always testing my brain here. They were. I believe they have been associated with St. Dominic's School in Benicia for a long time, and also St. Vincent Ferrer in Vallejo. So they were. I think they were already living at Hofstra.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, every time I talk to somebody from St. Vincent, St. Patrick's, they're so enthusiastic. They're just, you know, whether it's a student or a teacher or a principal, somebody in communications, they're just, they are so upbeat about their school.
Well, you know, and that was reflected in the interviews. Mm-hmm. Also, the principal, as I mentioned, Colleen Martin, mentioned
right.
that there's 14 faculty and staff that are St. Patrick, St. Vincent alumni.
Isn't that
so
something?
That's quite a few alumni involved in the school.
Yeah.
From the faculty or staff.
And like you point out, students who are like third generation of students, it's a great joy, and it doesn't always happen to people. People move around a lot and relocate, and that's great too. But there's something special to take your kindergartner to the same school that you went to kindergarten in.
Sure.
There's
sure.
something very special about that.
And they are doing a big effort now to Erin Jacobs, the Development Communications mm-hmm. Director. She's really trying to reach out to alumni under age 45 to connect them back to the school.
Mm-hmm.
Because that generation wouldn't be having their own kids
sure.
now.
Sure.
So, but it's really a testament to the school community, as people do move around a lot. I don't know what the stats are, but I think at one time it was sort of like 25% of people in California move every 3 or 4 years.
Right.
So, but we do have many places in our diocese, especially in a lot of our rural areas, and maybe not so much in the metropolitan areas. But we do have people that have roots going back generations.
Yep. Yeah, California used to be one of those states where an awful lot of people were from someplace else. You know, and that's now it's you've got. I mean, there's always been fourth or fifth generation people here, but now you're seeing a lot of people that are second, third generation. I came here from Oregon when I was 4 years old, and yet all of my kids, they're native Californians.
Mm-hmm.
So, go ahead.
I think we also didn't last time talk about our story about dual learning.
Yes.
And so let me kind of highlight some of the other stories in this issue, which is focused on Catholic education. We have the story about the Alexander family,
yeah.
Aaron and Sean.
Colfax.
They live in Colfax, and they have two daughters, Maple, 6 years old, and Magdalene, 2 years old. And they decided to, when they were looking around for schools, they came upon St. Joseph's School in Auburn. They had moved to Colfax from Milwaukee. That's quite a change.
Yeah.
And Erin says she was kind of on the fence about enrolling her daughter Maple there. But then she God works in interesting ways. I felt like it was an instant fit.
Hmm.
And she was excited about Jenny Oliver, the principal mm-hmm. of the school. And she says what made all the difference was the feeling of belonging in the church there. They had felt they had been actually estranged a little bit from the church, although they had both had Catholic school educations, and they had also done service work in Uganda. And Sean has a master's degree in Catholic theology from Marquette. I forgot about that, actually. We're both alumni.
That's your alma mater.
Well, I went to graduate school, yes.
Right.
And so they just felt that they were being pulled there, and so when there was an opening for their daughter, they enrolled her in St. Joseph's School. And I like this by Aaron. I started listening to Catholic hymns on my phone.
Hmm.
The songs have been comforting at a time when anxiety stirs amid COVID-19 worries. And Aaron feels her spirituality has supported her through the pandemic. She credits the theme for the school year for St. Joseph this year, which is Shine Your Light, as an uplifting mantra for their entire family as it mirrors their personal values.
Wow. That's beautiful stuff.
Yeah. So they're very happy, and I assume they're going to send the younger daughter there. And
The younger daughter is Magdalene. The picture of her with the four of them staring right at the camera, she just has such a darling look. It's kind of half curious, half posing. Like,
right.
Who is that taking my picture? It is so sweet.
Yeah. Well, it was Steve, my photographer, taking her picture.
Uh-huh. Well, that's a great photo.
Yeah. So anyway, that we just were lucky to find. Well, we weren't lucky. I mean, we were trying to find a Catholic family that would be willing to share their experience. And we actually have one of our other stories, and you've probably talked about this with the Catholic school department, but we looked at what was happening at two schools in our diocese, elementary, Mount St. Mary Academy in Grass Valley, and Holy Trinity School in El Dorado Hills,
mm-hmm.
and how they embraced uncertainty during the pandemic and some of the things that they did differently at their schools. And as far as Mount St. Mary Academy, Grass Valley, the principal, Edie Wood, who's been there for 13 years, says that they brought students back to campus the first week of August. And they wanted a smooth transition. They did a trial run for staff and put new protocols in place, such as the morning drop-off.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, as all the schools are doing, they're doing temperature and symptom checks and all kinds of sanitizing, and they're in their little pods and everything. So Mount St. Mary actually welcomed 178 students
mm-hmm.
in transitional kindergarten through 8th grade, which was a 42% increase from the previous year.
Boy, that's defying a lot of trends nationwide, isn't it?
Yeah. And she said even though where they're located, Nevada County, allowed schools to open, they were the only school to open 5 full days a week.
Hmm.
Other district schools did not well, schools and other districts either did not open or open as a hybrid or part-time model. Of course, with all of these, if the parents wish to keep them at home, that's the whole model of dual learning.
Right.
Because you can have some at home who are joining on Zoom.
Guys, talk to Mark.
But they still see the other class students.
I talked to Marcy Green the other day, and the principal at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton in Elk Grove, and she said that it was about 35% were doing, you know, distance learning, and 65% in person, you know, and that, you know, dual learning, and they're accommodating everybody, you know.
Uh-huh.
And the 35%, they have a variety of reasons, frequently contact with grandparents, caregivers,
right.
that makes them want to be a little more cautious about going out in public, you know. And it's just,
well, there's so many unique circumstances.
Exactly.
Here with underlying health conditions, and I think we're all learning to be quite flexible.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah,
you weren't flexible before. You are now.
You are now. That's exactly right.
Well, and actually, Mount St. Mary's Academy has a long history too. The Sisters of Mercy first came to Nevada City to serve in 1859. So
wow,
that's 161 years.
Well, it's just remarkable, because I believe that's one of the oldest schools west of the Mississippi.
Oh, I think it probably is. I don't know the whole history, but it definitely is one, if not the oldest school.
Yeah, it's just.
And then, of course, Holy Trinity School is not, I guess I won't say it's one of our newest schools, but it is. Well, maybe it is.
It's fairly
new.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't know how many, well, I think it's about from 1996. Perhaps,
that sounds about right. I don't know the exact date either, but yeah. It was certainly the school with the best view in the diocese.
One of the best views, I guess, on top of a hill.
Well, I know.
On Highway 50.
So many of our schools are, you know, flatlanders. You know, you can see across the street, and that's about. I mean, that's just the way it is in the valley. But they're up on that little bluff there, and they can. They can see the Sierra. They can see the Coast Range. They can even see Mount Diablo. You know, it's such a beautiful sight.
Yeah. So the interview there was with Denise Remick, who's the mm-hmm. principal, and she had previously been a principal in various roles for 18 years at Holy Family School in Citrus Heights, which closed, I believe, in June of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
So he describes how beginning last August, they had a meet and greet, family meetings with parents, and it was her chance to welcome families as the new principal. She met with each family, allowing the parents to see the classrooms and how the students' desks would be set up. And she says parents responded phenomenally, and the kids were little champions. And so not all families chose to return. The school further opted to cap enrollment at 185 students,
uh-huh.
about half of the capacity. So they offer remote learning. Some students Zoom into the classroom live with their teacher, and they fully engage with the class. So... and many families felt comfortable with what they were seeing on the classroom camera, and she calls it innovation at its finest, how students and staff keep the faith and community alive during this time. There's been several creative school-wide activities, a ministry awareness project, which culminated in We Run to Serve events, funds for various ministries. Video messages and songs were uploaded to the school's YouTube channel, and several donation collections were carried out to help those in need. She says, we won't stop doing this because service is the hallmark of spirituality in action.
Yeah, you know, and when you think about it, and I just can't say enough about our principals and our teachers with dual learning. When you think about just how hard, say, remote learning was to and this diocese got it in place over a weekend back last March, but you go take that, and now they're doing both. They're doing the same teacher is doing the classroom and doing the remote. It's not like, oh, there's uh-huh. There's kind of two separate tracks, and you got the technician over here doing the Zoom and all that, which requires certain skill level and a different way of handling everything. And then you have a classroom teacher doing the other. No, this same person is doing both. It's like they doubled their workload. And as Denise Remick is saying, the principal, nobody complained. It was a big ask, and nobody complained.
Right. And that's, it's pretty unbelievable to me, but I'm not a teacher. But I
just think it's remarkable.
Yeah, definitely. So we have that story, and then also, let's see what else we have here. We have a nice story about Father Alfredo Tamayo, who's been pastor for quite a few years of our parish, Our Lady of the Snows, in Lake Almanor.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to be retiring February 1st.
I've been in that
he
church.
He actually retired December 31st, but he was asked to stay on one more month, which he did.
It's so important to that area there, you know, the Lake Almanor area and Chester and all that area up in there. People so relate to their parish.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And, of course, that encompasses the Westwood area. I can't mm-hmm. remember what I think they have another mission, or at least a summer mission on there. But Father Tamayo, as some might know, he was one of the priests, along with Caesar, Father Cesar Agius, and there might have been one more priest. Father Cesar died some months ago of cancer, which was very unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
But Father Tamayo, Father Cesar, and there might have been one more priest, way back were asked by their archbishop
in the Philippines,
at the request of Bishop Wheaton, to come and serve in our diocese to serve our growing Filipino Catholic community mm-hmm. in many parts of our diocese. And so I believe they came in November 1996.
Mm-hmm.
Father Tamayo was ordained actually in 1977 and served in the Philippines in parishes. He was also in military service as a captain and a Catholic chaplain in the Philippine Army. But he came, and it was, you know, kind of a whole new thing for them, because I don't think any of them had left the Philippines before. But so the second half of his priestly ministry was in our diocese. He mm-hmm. was eventually incarnated in our diocese, and he served in Folsom, and he also served at St. Francis of Assisi Parish in Burnie.
That'll get you ready for Westwood and that area.
And he also served as parochial vicar at St. Joseph Parish in Sacramento.
Uh-huh.
And then he was for 6 years pastor at Shepherd Parish in Elk Grove. And so during that time, he had to help with the building of a permanent church for one of our fastest growing and really most diverse parishes, as well as overseeing the school, St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, for the Elk Grove parishes. And then he went to St. Basil Parish in Vallejo and served as pastor for 5 years. And then he's been at Lake Almanor for the past few years. So he's actually, when you look at it, the second half of his ministry, he really served a lot of in a lot of diverse areas in our diocese.
He really has, and I'll tell you, if I were, yeah, if I were the pastor at Our Lady of the Snows, I love that name. I just love the name of the church. If I were the pastor there, I don't think you'd ever get me out of there. That is, you got Mount Lassen just looming off in the distance,
right.
And oh, it's so, so beautiful there. It's
right.
Uncrowded, and
right.
and that church itself is just stunning.
Right, I've only been up there once. It's been some years ago, but it's a beautiful area.
It's memorable. That's for sure.
And so he's going to be living at St. Mel Parish in Fair Oaks.
Mm-hmm.
And helping out with, helping out with masses there and assisting other priests who need him to assist with masses in the area. He had, when I talked to him, he had hoped to visit the Philippines quite a lot and travel. But I talked to him initially, and then the story was done by Lynette Magnino, by Ryder. One of my freelancers, but and at that time he was really looking forward to traveling, but that's been curtailed a little bit. So he just said whenever he's wide open to whatever comes.
Well, I'll tell you, the Philippines has certainly blessed our diocese with a great number of clergy, and it's just been wonderful.
Yeah, I don't know how many we have, but it's definitely like 20 or 30.
Yeah, it's a significant number, absolutely.
Yeah. So, and then we have a story about the annual Hatlet appeal coming up in February. And, of course, we like to highlight a few people that have been helped from the previous year's ACA.
February? And, it's nowhere near February, is it?
Couple weeks.
How could it be almost February?
Right. Where you been?
and next thing you're going to tell me is it's almost Lent.
Well, that's true, too.
I know. It's amazing.
So, we have some brief profiles here of people who have been helped from last year's appeal. Here in Stinson, the volunteer coordinator and some of the volunteers from the Upper Room Dining Hall in Placerville. We also talked to Joe Smith, Advocacy Director at Loaves and Fishes in Sacramento, and Happy Wyatt, who's Executive Director of Northern Valley Hatlet Social Service, based in Redding, but of course covering a lot of the Northern California counties. And also our annual Hatlet appeal really helped out this year for urgent needs as they came up, as there has been such an unexpected surge in the amount of food that people have needed from all of our charities, really.
Mm-hmm.
As we've had a lot of people through the pandemic for various reasons have been thrown into homelessness, or maybe they had a job curtailment and they need food from Sacramento Food Bank, families and family services. So we really encourage people to look for that mailer in the mail, or how they can, there'll be a video out that people can view, and it'll be coming up in parishes really soon here, probably by the end of the month, where Bishop Soto will ask them to give. And as he says, Bishop Soto, through the annual Hatlet appeal, the whole Hatlet community places our trust in the words of Jesus. So it's really, and as people know, 25% of what they donate goes back to their own parish.
Right.
And their own parish decides how they will use the money to help people in need or in their various ministries in the community, or however the parish wants to decide how to use the money.
Yeah, this story has, you mentioned people from the Upper Room up in Placerville, and we were talking earlier about Placerville, the Mother Teresa maternity home up there, the Upper Room, dining room. in Placerville. It's amazing what dedicated people in one small town have done. Mm-hmm. It's really remarkable.
And I think that's an interfaith effort, isn't it? I don't think it's So, and Bishop Soto's home, which is, the headline is, Absence Makes the Heart Grow Fonder, maybe one of the blessings from this unborn or foreseen penitential plague. And I hope people will read that. It's kind of talking about how how growing up and throughout our whole lives, we're used to having a lot of routines and habits. And as we know from this period of the pandemic, a lot of those have been upset.
Yeah.
And thrown out the window. We don't have the same habits. Or maybe some of us do, but it's a really good thing that we can rely on some of our same habits, such as prayer and devotions and, maybe getting together with our families a little bit more. And he talks about it in the sense of related to Catholic education, of course, saying the ability to attend in-person classes in most, if not all, the Catholic schools, as well as many public schools, is still hampered by the necessary health protocols, limiting the interaction of students with one another and faculties and staff. Students and their families are more aware of the intangible but unmistakable value of social interaction. In Catholic education, it's a vital part of the religious environment that cultivates a Christian disciple, a true follower of Christ Jesus. Elements of this environment are found in the classroom and in church. They're also found on the playground. So I think we've all been, kind of realizing not to take for granted anymore the social activities and opportunities we had in the past.
And Bishop Soto talks about his football career.
That's in the earlier part of the article. Yeah,
it's great. It's just great reading. As a sports writer, I'm fascinated with his football career.
Except when he got tackled, he said, "I felt pummeled by a herd of cattle and laid on the ground dazed."
Haven't they heard of touch football?
Me, no. I went from the non-contact like basketball and tennis,
yeah. Well,
and softball. Although I hated sliding.
I mean, most colleges play intramural football, and it's either flag football or touch football. It's not tackle football. But I guess at seminary, he was talking about it. It was at St. John Seminary in Camarillo in Southern California, and
he got blocked.
Yeah,
is what happened.
Yeah. You have to read it. Have to read it. It's great stuff.
Right.
Yeah. That's very good. Very good. Well, absence makes the heart grow fonder. You know, it's amazing to me, sheltering in place, so-called, with my wife and four teenagers. I can't tell you how many wonderful evenings we've all had together where somebody isn't off at, the school play or choir practice or volleyball practice or whatever, because there's when everything's up and running like it normally is, there's no respect for time or date or anything. They'll have volleyball practice at 9 o'clock at night, I was reading about one of the high school water polo teams practicing at 10:30 at night just because of lack of availability of a pool and that kind of thing, and that really, you don't get that family time. I mean, you tend to get that family time when your kids are little, but even then, there's so many activities for them, and almost every night now they're the six of us sitting within two feet of each other. You don't have to social distance at home. And,
right.
And, maybe just enjoying a television program or just talking or you know, it that has been really a very wonderful, and I know this thing has affected everybody differently. You know, some people have gotten very sick, some people have died, many people have lost their jobs and don't have them back. Some are facing financial ruin, and there's just been a lot of turmoil, and we're lucky that we've had this time together that you don't get back. You know, you don't get back. They will grow older, they go off to college or go off to the military or go off to start working or get married or whatever, you know, go off to start careers of their own, which is the way it should be. But sure. this is time we're going to cherish.
Well, that's true, although I will say that I thought I saw your wife on the Davis Enterprise post a photo of one of your daughters sitting alone in the backyard in the hammock.
Yeah, yes. Yes. she had to get away from the madness.
That wasn't in the Enterprise. I'm sorry. That was wife as a senior, I believe.
It was probably...
Yeah.
You know,
so then you have that hammock for some quiet time.
Yeah, they love that hammock.
Have a sign up sheet for it.
I've never gotten comfy in a hammock, but they love that hammock. They'd sleep out there if they could.
Okay.
that's a poor man's trampoline, a hammock.
Yeah. Yes.
All you need is a couple of trees and some rope, and there you go.
Right.
So, well, Julie, it's a great addition, and of course we got Father Murphy, who always has something to say on the back page, and talking about in retirement, extra time for, are we surprised, prayer.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and learning more.
And yeah. Learning more. Yeah.
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 And I know he's been helping out at a lot of parishes.
Oh, yes. He has.
I'm not so sure so much during the pandemic, because I think for those retired priests who were 70 or 72 and older, that for their own safety, they weren't helping out so much.
Yeah, I remember, well, it was pre-pandemic, but recently going to Mass at Holy Rosary in Woodland with my family, and who's officiating, who's celebrating Mass? Father Murphy.
So. Oh, yes. He was helping out there for quite a while.
Yeah.
I think pretty much every weekend.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Julie,
yeah.
We were flat out of time. It's a great edition,
okay.
The Catholic Herald. We can't wait for the next one. And God bless your ministry. And we'll look forward to talking again soon.
Okay. Take care.
Thanks, Julie.
Thank
That's
you.
Julie
Bye.
Sly, the editor of the Catholic Herald, a wonderful magazine here in the Diocese of Sacramento. That'll do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
Empty hands held high, such small sacrifice. Joined with my life, I sing in vain tonight. May the word